Hey there. Welcome to the Women in Our Town podcast, a place for unsilent women to have important conversations. I'm your host, Purva Miller. Let's go. Jess Gaffney is an entrepreneur, startup co-founder, and nonprofit CEO. She is passionate about empowering women and companies in their pursuit of equitable success and devoted to being an advocate for all women. Welcome to the Women in Our Town podcast. I am thrilled today to welcome Jess Gaffney. She is the CEO and executive director of BEAM, formerly Women at Austin. It is a nonprofit organization that supports female founders and women-owned businesses and is doing a lot of amazing work in bridging the gender gap and how women get funded. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. And I think, you know, the work that you're doing is so important. And it's just, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this because last week we had Equal Pay Day, and I saw a lot of stuff going on Instagram about equal pay and the wage gap. And I think that people, you know, we talk a lot about the wage gap and we understand it somewhat, but we don't talk as much about the gaps in funding. And this is the core of your mission. So why don't you start by telling me a little bit about why you started, why you're working in the space, why you are passionate about bridging the gap in how women businesses get funded, women-owned businesses get funded, and also how do we understand the gap in funding? What's the information out there?
Yeah, I personally am super passionate about supporting women in general. And as I sort of moved, throughout my career, I have seen in the professional space that women are just really far behind in a lot of ways. And it's, you know, at a macro level, the statistics are there. So, you know, one of my sort of most sobering statistics that I like to share is that, you know, women, 88% of women-owned companies bring in less than $100,000 in revenue. Right. And only about 1.5% of them make more than $1 million.
Right.
And what I see that translate to, it's not just the, you know, individual women leaders, right? It's when women build companies, which as, you know, those stats share, we're really just building kind of nice jobs for ourselves. You know, we're not building larger companies, but the small percentage that are building larger companies, it has this ripple effect. You know, it's a social impact. It's an economic positive impact. It supports families, family policies, supports other women. When women build companies, they almost always give back to their communities. Like, I see this as one of the ways to solve so many of our inequities in our society that is just super important.
Sorry, go ahead. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was going to say, you know, I think of it as almost like one of like a way to solve a lot of systemic problems. So I feel super passionate about it.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's because big business and big industry controls so much of our world. And it seems like there is right now, there's sort of like no way out of it. You know, we say small business is the backbone of, you know, the economy. I mean, I've heard that so many times, but really it is big industry and big business that is the driver of policies, that is the driver of, you know, even social impact, environmental impact. And so we need to be getting more women into those spaces. So what are some of the typical funding sources currently for women-owned businesses? I read some, you know, when I was researching for this podcast, and in general, I read some pretty sobering statistics, but I'd love to hear from you. Where are women getting their funding? If, you know, I'm a woman that has a business idea and I want to start up, and maybe I don't have access to a lot of capital myself, where do I go?
Yeah, it's such a good and important question. And basically what I tell women is, because just to take a quick step back, you know, very early on when I took on this role, and from my own entrepreneurial experience, it's very clear that early stage capital is the biggest barrier for women to scale. Right. And what I'm seeing from a lot of women, you know, because a lot of women come to me and say that, you know, I need capital. I think the first step is to understand what kind of business you want to build and what success looks like to you, because mm-hmm. capital sources are very different depending on what you're looking for. And I think it's super important to demystify this, you know, so it shouldn't be this like super overwhelming, you know, I don't understand where to even go kind of experience, because for some reason men don't seem to have this that those same barriers. So I would say, on the first hand, if you are looking to build a smaller business, and what I define that as is, you know, you are looking to build a lovely, you know, income for yourself and for your family, and you want to keep it small, there's a lot of great benefits to keeping a small business, right? A lot of control, a lot of freedom. You know, you have other responsibilities, especially, you know, women often take on care for their families, you know, in a majority role. You know, I think that there's a lot of benefits in keeping a small business. It usually involves you. So, you know, it usually means human hours are it doesn't live beyond you.
Right.
So if that's the case, then there's several opportunities. One is you can bootstrap, you know, you can, you know, take some of your own savings. That's certainly not available to everyone. Another is friends and family can support you. You can do a crowdfunding campaign where you have pre-orders or potential customers support you, and you can get a loan at a bank.
Right.
That's typically the most common areas and sources for capital. On the other side is women that really want to scale larger companies. And that's where Beam and my work focuses. There's no right. positive, and, you know, I don't look at either one of them as bad or good, or, you know, I think there's positive and negatives. And that's why I think it's so important for women to really think about what they want and what success looks like to them.
Right.
And so the other side of it is women that are looking to scale companies, and, you know, that lives beyond them. So, you know, it's not, you know, I'm a lawyer and I'm going to bill my hours and I only have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if I don't sleep and eat, to bill, you know,
right.
This is, you know, models and software or products that can live beyond you.
Yeah.
And so for that group, what is often very much sensationalized is venture capital, right? That, you know, that's what we hear about. When I was a young entrepreneur and trying to build that kind of company, I immediately was told, you got to go talk to venture capitalists and firms, you know? And what is really important to know is that it's a very specific, narrow type of funding that is reserved for companies that are going to scale at a very large rate. And the ultimate goal is to exit or sell it for many, many millions of dollars, or IPO, right?
Right.
So if you don't have that as your North Star, then it's not what they're looking for. And you can be the best right. business in the world. And that's just not for everyone. You also obviously have to give up a bunch of control, because you're going to have to give up, you know, part of your company. But what I see for women is that we're not even getting to the place where we are venture backable, because we have so many barriers that we have to overcome right. before that. And what typically is the best way to get funding before that is to get angel investment. So those are individuals that are accredited investors that invest in startups. They are in control of their own money and they invest on behalf of their own wealth. VCs and funds, just so everyone knows that's listening, they invest other people's money. So they have to fundraise themselves.
Right.
And they fundraise from what's called LPs, or limited partners, that are either entities or individuals. And then they invest on behalf of them. And that means that they have people to answer to too, right?
Right.
So I've been trying to sort of spread this gospel, just so that because I get so many questions, and I think a lot of us, you know, enjoy like Shark Tank, for example.
Yes.
And we think, oh, you can just like go out and pitch and then you
get
money.
That's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of like pitching a business, right? Is everyone's watched Shark Tank at some point and knows, like, seen how that works.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and there's, you know, a lot more complexity to it, but in the end, it is important to educate yourself and to know, I think, what path you want to go down. If you know that early on, you'll make those, you know, capital decisions and what direction to go in pretty early on.
And, you know, so something you said that kind of really stuck out to me is that women aren't even getting to that place of where they think that they're in a position to be scaling a big company. That's, I'd like to explore that a little bit more, because you're right. A lot of, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I have I own my business, and
yeah,
you know, and for me, I just want to keep my business for many reasons smaller. And, yeah, and my goal is to not scale, but I've also never, every time I ever have talked about my business, I've always gotten the feedback that what you said, that, you know, it will be a great living for you and your family. You know, you could make a few hundred thousand dollars a year. Not that I'm making that right now, but someday, yeah, whenever you've scaled to that place, and that's going to be great. And so the messaging that I get as a business owner, and I'm assuming that this is quite often the case for a lot of women out there, is keep your business small. And I, you know, I'm interested to know, why is that? Why is there this pushback to women? Because if we're not getting the messaging that we should be taking risks and we can, you know, go out there and someone will listen to us and someone will back our business and give us X millions of dollars to scale it, how are we even going to dream to get there?
It is so important that we talk about this. I'll tell you just a very quick anecdote. When I was working on my own startup and I had a co-founder, and, you know, we were kind of talking one day about where we see this going. And, you know, I remember us talking about, like, wouldn't it be amazing if we sold this for $100,000? And then I was like, oh my God, like, that is how far we can dream. Like, we are so stunted when it comes to dreaming and what is possible. And that is so important to talk about, because you're right. Like, you know, the term lifestyle business comes up a lot, I think.
Yes.
And, you know, and it's not just for women, you know, but I see it, you know, we have a woman in, you know, we're headquartered in Austin, and one of our biggest supporters is a woman named Kendra Scott. And Kendra Scott owns a jewelry company that's valued at over $1 billion. And, you know, I've heard her talk a lot about this. She, you know, when she had a jewelry business in her second bedroom while her, you know, baby son was in the other, you know, she was told over and over again how cute her lifestyle business is. Oh, that's so great. You make jewelry. Yep. You can make a great living for you and your family. You know, I love what you do. And she was like, hell no. Like, this is bigger. I have a vision. And she has built a $1 billion company. And so I'm very careful at Beam to make sure that I never tell someone, even if whatever their model is actually defined as not scalable in a way, that we don't talk with that language. Because if you, it goes back to, again, like, your vision for this, you know, like, that, it, that anything is possible. And you're absolutely right. We're, you know, that mindset is huge. And it for some reason affects women so much more. You know, can I do this? The whole imposter syndrome, all that kind of stuff. And the reality is that, you know, we just have to have like confidence of like a mediocre white man and we'll be fine. You know, like,
you're absolutely right. The confidence of a mediocre white man. I'm going to start using that as sort of my daily mantra. Just show up as a mediocre white man to your business today.
You know, it's like, you know, there's so much research too. Like, for example, with women applying to jobs, you know, we're talking about getting equal pay, right? Or we mentioned that early on. You know, women that they look at a job description, if they don't check off every single box, they won't even apply. Yep. Men look at it, if they check off half, they'll apply, yep. You know, and then they'll go negotiate, you know, yes. You know, and it's like, well, women are like, well, I don't really meet all the requirements, so maybe I shouldn't negotiate. This is what I deserve. And it's crazy because women are so valuable and they bring, they're such great leaders and they bring so much to the table. And I think, you know, our entire society is missing out when we don't have those seats at the table, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Obviously, I'm a little bit passionate about this.
Just a little, just a bit.
Yeah,
So, you know,
go on. Sorry.
No, I'd love to get into a little bit of this in terms of how women receive funding compared to their male counterparts when they're actually, when they get into the room, when they're in front of a VC. What is, I read something that was interesting that talked about how it even goes back to very simple things like the questions they're asked. Men are asked promotion questions, so growth, acquisition, scalability. Women are asked questions about loss, failure, prevention. So I'd love to, you know, get your thoughts on who is the typical VC and what are, you know, what do they see and what are they looking for when a woman walks in to pitch her business?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I'm fascinated by this. Like there are the studies that you just mentioned, like it could basically make or break, you know, if you get millions of dollars, those simple, how you answer those questions. And if you can turn a prevention question in, you know, and answer it in a promotion way. But to your point, you know, yes, I think one of the biggest problems that we have is that women are not in places where they're making the capital allocation decisions. They're not actually the investors. I think right now it's about 8% of all VCs are women. You know, you typically see like the VC partners are men, and then like the one woman marketing person or like the assistant or something, you know. Yeah. And it's such a shame because, you know, women make, you know, 85% of the buying decisions in households. You know, they have so much power, and for some reason, you know, it's sort of being stifled. I like to say too that on a human level, like I meet a lot of VCs, and I think that, you know, on a human level, if you and I are sitting, you know, on Zoom across the table, whatever you want to call it, like, we can relate to each other. We both identify as a woman. We can relate to each other in a way that just would never happen if I was having a Zoom call with a man right now. And I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, they say a lot that investing is art, you know, not a science. And it's a lot of like, I trust that you're going to build this type of company and you're capable of it. And who do we trust? People that look like us and people that we relate to and, you know, products that we use ourselves and services that resonate with our lifestyles. So I like to give also sort of the industry a little bit of credit that, like, I think on a human level, a lot of it isn't intentional. Like, I'm not going to invest in women. It's more, you know, what sort of you relate to. And frankly, it's such an industry of connections. And that's a big thing for with women. You know, it's a network industry. So a lot of VCs, the way they get their deals, their pipeline is through personal recommendations. Right. And those personal recommendations then are other men. And so it's this really terrible cycle in a way. But you're absolutely right that we need to get women on the other side of the table and making those investment decisions. I read the other day that by 2030, women will have 2/3 of the world's wealth. And that, you know, through inheriting it or whatever it is, and I have a lot of hope, you know, that yeah. means that they will then start investing and become LPs and have, you know, a say in the type of companies that they invest in.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think this kind of comes to the point of who controls the money. Really, yeah. at the end of the day, that's the question, right? And it seems that wealth is concentrated in the same circles. And like you said, it's an industry of connections. People are looking for personal recommendations. So I wonder if the people that are even getting in front of these VCs, that are getting in the door, that are able to pitch their businesses, are people that are kind of already part of the circle. And so that kind of brings me, this was interesting because I was also thinking about, and I don't think we can talk about the gender gap in funding without also talking about the racial inequities in how we fund business. The average net worth of white families in America is $171,000. The average net, including all assets, whether that's, you know, home ownership or whatever, the average net worth of Black families is $17,600. That is a massive, massive, that's a gulf. Like that's not, yeah. you know, that's so, and I read that to date, only 93 Black women owned businesses have received funding of $1 million. So wow. when we think about the racial inequities, how does racial bias make access to capital prohibitive for BIPOC people, for Black women, for women of color, for, you know, Indigenous women? How is it just this lack of access to networks and to startup wealth? Or again, like you said, does it come back to the human level of, well, I can't really relate to you?
Yeah, I mean, it is such a it's such a big problem. It's such a complex problem. It's a systemic problem. You know, it is true. I mean, for VC, women get about 3%, depending on, you know, kind of what study you look at. Black women, 0.0006%. I mean, we're talking, it's almost statistically impossible, like you said, right. to fundraise. And with that means, you know, when you get funding at the VC level, and, you know, if you are successful, generational wealth comes with that. And right. it's handed down, you know, after generation after generation. And you can see how clearly, for many reasons, that's not happening with the Black community and people of color. And, you know, it's really tough. You know, I think it does come back to the networks for yeah. sure. It comes back to the, you know, where people value putting their money, and what they believe is, you know, important and should, you know, be their area of focus. I think I'm hopeful that we are changing things. Beam just actually, our angel investor network just funded our first Black women founder, our largest investment yet. She will, amazing. She is fundraising $2 million and she will get there for yes. sure. So I'm happy to see, maybe she's number 94. but what, you know, again, it sort of goes back to what I was saying when we first started talking, like one of the wonderful things about this one woman fundraising successfully and building that kind of scalable business is that other than Black women will benefit. Because she will then turn around once she builds that wealth and invest in other Black founded companies. And that's what, frankly, white people have been doing
for
decades. Yeah, forever. You know, like, and so, you know, it's not a problem, unfortunately, we can solve overnight, but I am seeing a lot of, I guess one of the very few silver linings of all, you know, the racial injustices that have been happening this year, at least, you know, in my world, I'm seeing a lot of, new funds popping up that are specifically directed towards, you know, people of color or underrepresented groups in general. I personally went through an accelerator program called Div Inc., which was specifically focused on helping startup founders, women or people of color and or people of color, which was life-changing for me.
Yeah.
So there are things happening, but, you know, we have a real problem in this world with racial inequities and making, for some reason, others feel less than. And it affects not only the individuals, but generations to come, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, one of the proudest things that I can say that we're doing at Beam is that we have now, through our angel investor network, invested in 9 women founders, and 6 out of 9 are women of color.
That's amazing.
And the thing is, yeah, it is amazing, because the truth is that it's not because we're like doing it because it's the good thing to do. We're right. doing it because we actually see that these are great investment opportunities. Like,
right.
you know, you can
it's
argue
charity.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You can argue to death too, that like, it's the right thing to do. And it's in, you know, there's inequities and it's not fair and it's your moral responsibility. But the reality is that a lot of these VCs are just missing out on,
good opportunities.
Yeah. Good deals.
Yeah. Good deals.
And because they're not in their networks. And frankly, if they start out and they don't get the funding very early on, they don't even get to that point. So they can't even see them, you know,
right.
later yeah. in the journey. So, you know, it's tricky, because investing at very early stages is the highest risk, you know?
Right. Right. So, you know, and I want to come back to something that we had sort of touched on a little bit earlier, and that was the profile of a woman-owned business, which you said, and I agree with you, because I see a lot of it, is the lifestyle business or the lifestyle brand. Is that just sort of a bias that we're seeing because women typically are encouraged to go down the route of jewelry or fashion or marketing or, you know, sort of these like pink collar businesses? Or is it that it is, again, larger systemic problems, fewer women in STEM, although I don't know if that's the case anymore, but what are VCs looking for? What kind of business are they looking to invest in? Is it just a tech business? Is it just products? Is it just something that is, you know, and that has already shown proof of concept before they even make the first investment?
Yeah. So if you are at a stage where a venture capital firm is seriously looking at you, you have definitely already accomplished product market fit. You know, right. you are in a very large industry. And that can be, you know, beauty is a billion, you know, several billion dollar company, you know, whatever it is, but you have to be in an industry that is very large. Because again, you know, they're looking for that exit at the end.
Right.
And you usually have about $1 million in revenue, or you have significant users. The word that's often used is traction. So you are growing month over month at a very high rate. You have a great team. Team is huge. So
right.
If you're a sole founder, you have a team behind you. If you, you know, have co-founders, that they all have a good role. And they're also a like founder market fit. So like you're right. the best person to lead this type of company. And, you know, what I think is very important to note too, is that, like I said before, VCs have theses. So what that means is basically parameters on what type of businesses they can invest in. So some are focused on CPG or consumer product goods, which is basically, you know, awesome food products and, I don't know, this kind of cup or whatever it is.
Laundry
detergent. Exactly. Right. And then there's, you know, VCs that focus on technology. You know, there's VCs that, you know, whatever it is, it's really important to identify what type of VC is a good fit for your company, because they might love you and love the concept, but if it's not in their thesis, they can't invest in you. Because remember, they have people to answer to as well. So that's really important to look at. And, you know, I would say, again, they're looking for things that can scale. So technology is usually, most common sort of thesis that I see, but it really, really ranges. And it also ranges stage, right? We hear a lot about these different stages, like pre-seed, seed, series A. Usually series A is when venture capital comes in. And it's described as institutional investing. Pre-seed seed is usually more like angel investors and things like that. But you're now finding a lot of funds or venture capital firms that are focused on like the seed stage, you know, a little bit earlier. But yeah, you have to be pretty far along and you have to really be on your way to scaling for sure. But I'm curious because, you know, when you were coming up with your company, you know, you mentioned you have made choices about keeping it small. Yeah. And I think that is so key, you know, like it's having being empowered enough to make those choices that are right for you is what it's all about. What drives me insane is when a woman wants to scale and is told that what she's doing, you know, isn't that way, or she is told it so often and so much that she doesn't even think that there's the possibility of building something like that.
Yes.
Right.
No, I agree. It's the messaging out there. And I think this is pretty universal. A lot of people will say this. I'll give you, I have a good example of this actually. Mark Manson is a writer. He wrote The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And he's like a content creator and, you know, he's huge. He's written about how he scaled to a 7-figure business and now is in just off of his own writing and his blog and his content, and has intentionally decided to keep it small. He has been approached many times to scale it, and he says no, because I understand my values and I know what I want out of this and I know the life that I want. So I am keeping it to a team of me and 2 freelancers and an assistant. Like this is the entirety of my team. And I don't plan on this growing any bigger than this because it affords me the lifestyle that I want. And the confidence with which he can say that.
Exactly.
But he could totally just walk in anywhere and somebody would hand him, I don't know how many millions of dollars to buy that blog and that content platform off of him and all the rights to his work. It's the messaging. I think that's very empowering. But on the flip side, I think that women are never given that, you know, this could be a billion-dollar business. It's always, why do you want to build a billion-dollar business? Why can you not be happy with a $2 million business?
Yep.
And that's like,
you seem really ambitious or really greedy, you know, when that kind of language starts coming out.
That kind of language starts coming out. And I think that is the problem. I want women to be able to say, I want to build a billion-dollar business, or thanks, I could build a billion-dollar business, but I want to keep it at 2 million or 200,000 because I want to, you know, I don't know, go lie on the beach all day or just, you know, work from my laptop.
Have
control of my life. And I think that's kind of where things get a little murky. And I think we really need to change the messaging to women in terms of the kinds of companies they're looking to build. I remember I was researching for another article a few months ago about some of these women-owned businesses, these unicorn status businesses that had scale to this, you know, incredible level. And I think we talked about this briefly on our intro call, Away Luggage, Glossier, Thinks Underwear. And how so many of these businesses and so many of these women-owned businesses, they're the founder is young And they're not given the right support. They're not given the right resources. They get all of this funding. So even if they get in the room and they get all of this funding, they're not given the actual support on how to scale a business. Because I could be 27 years old and have made a really good, you know, makeup product or a nice piece of luggage. Doesn't mean I know everything about running a business. And so I'd love to get a little bit, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on what are the support networks that women need aside from the funding to be able to scale a business? What does that support ecosystem look like?
Yeah, and I think this is so important to talk about because, you know, again, like those examples are totally sensationalized. And the reality is that most of us are not doing that. But it really is true that, you know, getting that kind of funding is like rocket fuel, you know, and then you're on a rocket and you're, you know, which is hard for anyone to, you know, to handle, let alone someone, you know, who's super young. But, you know, having that support is essential, like you said. And that's not just for those women, but for anyone building a company. And I can't say this enough that I feel like network is so important for women. And so I, you know, I advise students to do this. I advise young startups to do this. I have seen it be successful in my own career, is growing your network as early and as, you know, as well as you can will help in so many different ways. And it's not just about funding. It's about, you know, exactly what you were talking about. Oh, wow. Now I have been thrown into a leadership position. How do I handle culture? How do I handle hiring? How do I, you know, model, you know, build whatever it is, you know, having a network of people that you can tap into that it's not the first time you're speaking to them, you know, will, I think, make all the difference. And I think, you know, women, and just, I guess, quickly to kind of finish that out, it doesn't have to be that complicated, right? A lot of women are like, well, I don't know anyone. Like, how do I do this? Also, you know, what I hear a lot too is like, what do I have to offer? You know, like it's, you know, and I just think you can't think of it that way, right? And it can be as simple as like, okay, I'm going to try to meet someone, one person a month that just enables me to grow my network. And then when you meet that one person, how, you know, you got to be creative about it. If it doesn't come easily to you, you know, think through like, what kind of jobs sound interesting to you? What kind of people, you know, are you drawn to? And then find three of those people and reach out to them and figure out how you can get to know them and then ask them who you can meet, who they can introduce you to. So you just sort of like build this spider web, but, you know, and then follow up with those people and stay in touch and be respectful of their time. You know, don't start asking for a coffee every week kind of thing or a Zoom, I guess, in these day and ages. But the other thing I was going to say is just, you know, in general, leadership is so interesting to me from a woman's standpoint, because obviously this is a generalization and not every woman leads it, you know, the same way. But I do think that women, a lot of women that I see that are building startups, they do a great job of just also surrounding themselves by an incredible team that they have a close relationship with. They know they don't know everything, you know, and they can learn from other people and they aren't afraid to say that and be vulnerable. Yeah. And so I think that's a big part of it too, that I've seen be such a huge part of success.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, networks these days are like money in the bank in a way. It's more valuable than money in the bank initially. And if you are trying to scale a business or get a job or whatever, it's, you know, everything's coming back to sort of who you know. And it's when you think of VC funding and when you think of raising capital, there's all this mystery around it, but when you break it down, it's very simple. It's people liking people, getting to know people, relating to people, believing in them and then putting money and their vision, and then putting money behind their product, right? And I think so often it's the idea, it's the product, it's the, you know, perfecting it to something so out of out of reality before I can even start thinking, when you could start even when you are still building your business, you grow your network, because that might come 4 years later or 2 years later.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, it's like, believe in yourself that eventually you will get to a place where you might need that. Or even if you're thinking, just want to leave the option open, you know, and, but I agree too with that sentiment that, I don't know if this is how you feel, but, you know, I suffer from this a little bit too, is like feeling like I need to have everything buttoned up and everything look great before I put it out in the world. You know, like, I started a company when I was when I was 21, with my best friend, and it did not, it failed. And I can't tell you the shame that I felt around it. And so the next time I wanted to start a company, I wouldn't tell anyone until I felt like I was absolutely ready. And looking back, that is so crazy, first of all, that I connected, you know, my personal worth with starting a company. Like, what about the fact that I was like freaking brave, that I was 21 years old and I did it, and I learned so much from it, and I realized that it was not, you know, it was not viable. And so I made a smart and informed decision to not move forward, you know, like all that kind of thinking. I mean, obviously now, you know, I'm older and there's wisdom in it, and it still doesn't feel great, you know, but looking at it as a learning opportunity, and then also being able to share something that's not fully baked with the intention of learning from others and getting ideas and interviewing potential customers, like all that is smart, not shouldn't be scary, you know?
No, absolutely. And I mean, you know, that would be a whole new can of worms, the women and failure, but I completely agree with you. I felt this way when I started my business in in the pandemic, and I would couch the language in we terms instead of me terms. And I had, you know, I had some help, and I had a partnered with a friend, but it was mostly me. And I was so afraid to, you know, I wanted to sound more legitimate than I felt I was, which I was already legitimate because I was doing it. And so, you know, my business has taken many lives as well, and it's changed, and it'll probably continue to change. And it's just the nature of it. But I'm, you know, I look back on it and I'm like, well, how brave was I to start this in a pandemic? I bootstrapped it. I put my own capital into it. I had some, you know, was fortunate enough to have some savings to be able to get it up and running. And I grew my network myself. So that was every single woman I've interviewed, every single connection I've made has come from me. This is not somebody, you know, these weren't networks that were handed to me. So you're right that we should look at what we're building and be proud of it, instead of this fear of, well, this is not going to go anywhere. And if it fails, it fails. So we'll try something, we'll learn, and we'll try something new, and we'll try something different. And, you know, that's what being an entrepreneur is about.
Yeah. And I mean, I have not met a successful entrepreneur yet that hasn't failed and used that as sort of fuel, or hasn't really gone through, you know, really, really challenging parts of their, you know, business or company journey. But it's like, it's just I think something, especially for women, that, you know, even though I'm sharing that now I have that different perspective, it doesn't mean that I always have that perspective. You know, I have self-doubt, and I still have those feelings. So it's, for me, it's a practice. I remind myself, and I really try to give advice to myself that I would give to others freely, and try to really take it. And I like to think of sort of all those negative thoughts and, you know, fears and all that kind of stuff as just thoughts and just, right. you know, like, so I can yeah. actually like put them in a cloud and have them float away. And they're just yeah. thoughts. They don't make, it's not real. Just because you have a thought doesn't make it real. And right. so I try to remember that as well, because I am in a, you know, I think of myself as a, right now I'm leading a nonprofit, but I think of myself as an entrepreneur, and I'm going to do other entrepreneurial things in my life. And it makes all the difference, your mindset, right?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And, you know, I think what you're doing is amazing. I think you're, I don't want to say bringing humanity to venture capital and funding, because humanity is there, but at the same time, it's not the part that we see. And I think that your organization, the way you've, you know, what you've built and your mission and how you present it and how you've spoken to me today, it's very hopeful. And, you know, I kind of want to leave on this note that we learn humanity from other humans, right? So at the end of the day, like you said, it's just you and me sitting across from each other, talking on Zoom, relating on, you know, being women, being entrepreneurs, and so many different levels. And I think that that is the mindset we need to keep reminding ourselves, even as women, because we are empathetic. So we can understand that if we can make that connection with somebody and we've got a great idea and we've got traction, then there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is.
That's a beautiful sentiment. And I really appreciate your kind words too. You know, I'm really proud of what, you know, the work that I do. And it's super important, you know, to help all women rise. You know, there's certainly enough room. We have a long way to go. But you're right. That connection is huge, and never more than ever. Right. Like, this during this crazy year, you know, I feel like, you know, when I have a Zoom call or a conversation like we're having, that I leave energized from instead of drained.
Yeah.
It's such a win, and it just shows the power of connection and learning from each other and all that. So thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jess. Thanks for joining me on the Women in Our Town podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to catch up on all episodes of this podcast or get more great content, head on over to womeninourtown.com or follow the conversation on Instagram and Twitter at womeninourtown.